This is Live and Local, and on our show today, we have a number of cast members from the Rantoul Theater Group's production of Frank Capra's film, obviously an adaptation for the stage, It's a Wonderful Life. It's that time of year when that movie shows up. I assume it still shows up on the TV at various times, and certainly has become a classic of the film repertoire. And they're bringing it to the stage. Their production opens this weekend, and we will talk with them about the theater group, about that show, and have a number of scenes played out for us, radio style, on Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more on FM 90.9. We heard music from the film The Alamo, the overture to that music. Music was by Dmitri Tiomkin, and the reason I played it is that that composer happens to be the fellow who wrote the music to Frank Capra's film It's a Wonderful Life. And so throughout our hour, we will occasionally hear some of his music to other films. Unfortunately, we don't have the soundtrack here to It's a Wonderful Life, so I thought that's the next best thing, give a sample of at least that particular composer's music, and we're talking about It's a Wonderful Life because the Rantoul Theater Group is presenting it on stage beginning this weekend and running for two weekends. Performances are on the 3rd and the 5th at 8 o'clock, and then the following weekend, the 11th and the 12th at 8, and then Sunday matinees on the 6th and 13th at, what time are those matinees? 2 o'clock. And we have with us a number of members of the cast of RTG's production of It's a Wonderful Life. Director is Mike Nelson, and he's with us as well. And gentlemen and ladies, why don't we just sort of introduce ourselves from my left. Tell us who you are and who your character is.
My name is Randy Offner, and I play George Bailey.
He's the star of the show, in other words. Okay.
Yeah, I'm Larry Smith, and I play Mr. Gower. And today I'm going to do Mr. Potter's scene for you.
And remind us, who is Mr. Gower?
Mr. Gower is the druggist who ends up being a drunk druggist. And what happens early on in the very beginning of the play, he gets word that his son was killed during the war, and so he takes the drink. And he mixes up some poison in medicine. And when George Bailey was a young man at 12 years old, he worked for the druggist as a delivery boy. And in that particular scene, what happens is that the delivery boy, young George Bailey, does not deliver the medicine because he knows it's poison, and he confronts his boss, Mr. Gower, and lets him know what a terrible mistake he's made. And, of course, Mr. Gower ends up being so apologetic and sorry, and he actually has a little bit of a breakdown on the stage. But the thing that it shows is that from the very beginning, when George Bailey was a young man, he was a good, good person and concerned about his town and the people in the town. And this sets up this whole life since he was a young man at 12 years old till he becomes the adult that he is today.
Here is someone who knows his role. Apparently, in the history behind his role, and then Mike, you're the director.
Are
you,
yes, I am.
Are you playing in this also?
Today, I'm playing Bert, Ernie, and Uncle Billy.
Bert and Ernie is this Sesame Street?
Yes, and it's sort of a disputed fact that the characters from Sesame Street were derived from these two characters.
A disputed fact.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be a fact or not.
Probably as many articles and opinions defending it as objecting to it. So,
yeah, that's the way those things go, isn't it? Okay, so yes, next.
I'm Jessica Holmes, and I'm a substitute Mary today.
And so are you doing anything in the show normally?
Not this particular one, no.
But Jessie is very active in our group, and she has actually directed many of our shows as well as participated in them.
Yeah, you were here the last time we talked to folks from the Rantoul Theater Group. What was
yes.
the show that was you were doing at the time?
Pirates and Petticoats. Oops, sorry.
Pirates and Petticoats. Whoops, I'm dropping things all over the place. And next.
Lynn Padal. I play Clarence Oddbody, AS2.
AS2, what is that?
You'll find out in the first scene.
Oh, I will, huh? Do I have to be particularly astute to discover it?
No, you have to be obtuse to miss it.
Okay, good. Well, I might then in that case. And this last fellow is well known to listeners of our companion station, AM 580, Jeff Bossert.
I am playing dual roles in the show. I am playing Harry Bailey, George's brother who goes off to war and gets the Congressional Medal of Honor, and also Sam Wainwright, who is the well-off friend of George's, who in the play encourages him to, and you'll hear in a scene reenacted here in the program, encourages him to get involved in plastics to ditch the Bailey Building and loan, practice the family business and go into this industry with him. So.
Okay. So, for those who didn't happen to be listening the last time when Jessica was here, Jessica, right?
Yes.
Was here before. I'm going to guess that that's many people since our listeners sort of tune in and tune out at will. Somebody give us an overview of the Rantoul Theater Group and what you all are about, how long you've been around, and so on.
Thanks, Clay.
Jessica's getting the nod.
We've been in existence for 10 years. There was a small group before us, and then it folded. But when we found the place at Grissom Hall, we started at like 2 to 3 plays a year, and we've built up to 5 a year. The group has continued to add on volunteers, and we've put on a wide variety of shows, between children's shows and classics and maybe some obscure ones, too, that maybe don't get the audience members that you would like. But all in all, the theater group has provided a great network of friends. And not only do we try to do theater, but we also try to do some good in the community. And for that, I'm very proud.
Does the cast draw exclusively from people in Rantoul?
No. Champaign, Urbana, Fisher, they've come from as far as maybe an hour and a half drive to be in
a
show.
Bloomington, Decatur.
Really? Paxton, I heard whispers.
Yeah, Paxton. Yeah.
Danville.
Paxton, yeah.
Danville.
Fisher, Gifford.
So good, all over the place. That's good. Always plays or sometimes musicals?
We've had a couple musicals. We don't quite have the talent. However, we have shared our stage with Paxton, and they've done 2 musicals on our stage.
I think the main lack of talent is on the technical side, the folks who are able to choreograph and direct the musical aspects. We're a little short on that. We have plenty of talented actors and actresses.
Yeah, I would think so if you're drawing from such a wide pool of potential actors. That was Mike Nelson, by the way, who's directing It's a Wonderful Life for Rantoul Theater Group. And this is Live and Local. What was I just going to ask you? I think I just forgot it for a second. This particular... Oh, no, yeah. Did I read somewhere that you have to move your theater, or the theater is closing, or
yes,
something
the building
like that.
That we are using is a reclaimed building from the Air Force Base, and it's about the size of a city block. It was originally an airplane hangar and workshop, and they converted it to classrooms and such later on, but it's in bad shape. It is actually still owned by the Air Force, and the city is the caretaker of it, but the roof is leaking in multiple places. It cost them upwards of $500,000 a year to heat and cool the building, and they can't really, there's nothing they can do to reduce it. They have to heat or cool the whole building or nothing. And because of the state that it's in and the cost involved, they're looking to close it as soon as they can, but we really don't know how soon, because the Aerospace Museum and the Lincoln's Challenge Academy are also making use of this building and don't have immediate prospects to move.
Yeah, so you've got a theater for now.
For now.
And you're hunting in the meantime.
Absolutely.
Or just wringing your hands.
Yes.
A little of both.
Uh-huh. If anybody has several thousand they want to donate to us, please go right ahead.
Yeah, by all means. It's a Wonderful Life is, as I said at the introduction, it's obviously a classic, and the film shows umpteen times every year on different channels, I guess. And Christmas time, you can, if you just channel surf, you're probably going to run into somebody airing it. How often, do you have any idea how often this is done as a stage production?
I know that it's done every year. It is actually listed as a limited availability because it is so popular. I couldn't tell you how many locations because they have, you know, they produce productions nationwide, but I know that you have to make a request earlier than is normally required to get the rights to do this production because of that.
So people are doing it. This is the first time Grand Tool Theater Group has done it?
Yes.
And did you have to, how early did you have to get your request in? How long have you known you're going to do the show?
I believe we requested it in February.
Oh, that's not too bad as shows go.
Well, generally we tend to find that we can request it about 2 months before we open.
Wow.
To a lot of these plays. I mean, there's just so many titles out there available that it's generally not that difficult, but this one, especially at this time of year, is more sought after.
Yeah, and how early do you set your, do you do a season, a calendar year season, so 2009 is your season, or do you go 09 and 10?
We do a calendar year, and we set the majority of next year's season in October.
So you already know what most of next year is going to be.
Yes.
Good. And then when did you start casting or do auditions for this show?
Early October.
Second week.
Yeah, I think it was the
first weekend.
Very beginning of October.
Okay, so you've been rehearsing a couple months, month and a half, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the cast is what, about 20 people, it looks like?
28, I believe.
30. We have one. Well, it's, there we go. We have people prompting each other here.
Well, we have some extras and some technical hands and things like that that tend to get added in.
Yeah, so it's a good cross section of the various communities, certainly in our listening area, and we're glad that you all came in today. And you brought a number of scenes that we're going to do. Do you know how closely does this dramatization follow the film?
It's probably about 80% following of the film. In its attempt to condense the material for the stage as well as overcome some of the technical aspects. It is based on the film as opposed to some other work, so overcoming the times and places, and men always seem to be in scarce supply in the theater, so they've converted several of the supporting roles to females or transitioned the lines to a female existing member. But it's about 80%.
So most of the text are words that would be said said in the film as well.
Yes.
Okay, good. So this much of this should sound familiar to those who haven't seen the stage production but are big fans of the film and can run around reciting lines. And I'm sure there are people who can do that sort of thing. So, who wants to set up our first scene?
Well, the first thing is scene is the beginning of the play, and whereas in the movie they have talking stars to explain a lot of what's going on, in the play, Clarence takes on a bit of a narrator role to transition us from location to location. And so the play starts out with Clarence and George meeting on the bridge when George is in such a sorry state.
And Clarence is, of course, George's guardian angel.
That's correct.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Wouldn't do what?
What you were thinking of doing.
How do you know what I was thinking?
Oh, we make it our business to know lots of things.
Look, whatever you're selling, I'm not interested. Please just leave me alone.
No, you don't understand. I got a job to do here.
I said leave me alone.
This isn't going very well. Well, you said it was going to be easy. But he won't listen. I know. If at first you don't succeed, blah, 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 blah. Have you ever read Tom Sawyer?
What?
Now, there was an industrious young man, and when the chips were down, he never gave up. You remember why?
Who cares?
He kept thinking about others, George, not about himself, but about all the folks that needed him.
You called me George. How do you know my name?
Oh, I know all about you. I've watched you grow up from a little boy.
Well, how could you? I've never seen you before.
You haven't needed to till now. How's the lip? Looks like it stopped bleeding.
Well, that's the answer I got to a prayer a little bit ago.
Oh, no, 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 George. I'm the answer to your prayer.
And who are you?
Clarence Oddbody, AS2.
Oddbody, AS2. What's the AS2?
Angel, second class.
Now I know I've lost my mind.
Not yet, but you were well on your way. That's why they sent me down. Besides, it's ridiculous to think of killing yourself for merely $8,000.
How did you know that?
I've been trying to tell you. I'm your guardian angel. I know everything about you.
Well, you look like the kind of angel I'd get. I'll give you that much. Sort of a fallen angel. What happened to your wings?
I haven't won my wings yet. That's why I'm an angel second class. But you're going to change all that.
I am how?
By letting me help you.
The only way you can help me is to get me 8,000 bucks before that clock strikes 12. After that, my life turns into a pumpkin.
Sorry, but we don't use money in heaven.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting. Well, down here, you can't live without it. And if the truth be known, I'm worth a lot more dead than alive.
Now, look, I told you, you mustn't talk like that. I won't get my wings with that attitude. Besides, you don't realize how much you're worth. If it hadn't been for you...
If it hadn't been for me, everybody I know would be a lot better off, Clarence. Everybody. My wife, my kids, my friends.
You sure have a lot of friends, I'll tell you that. Why, you know they've jammed up the airwaves for over an hour now?
What are you talking about?
Prayers. When they're heartfelt, they're mighty powerful missiles. And the ones for you, why, they've lit up our whole celestial system.
Why? How?
Because you're such an important influence on so many lives, George. Always have been, just like Tom Sawyer.
Since when?
Ever since that day you saved your little brother from drowning when he fell through the ice.
Well, that was instinct, Clarence. Besides, I was only 12.
There were other boys there that day, some of them older and better swimmers. They didn't nod to their instincts, only you did.
He was my brother.
I know. But what about Mr. Gower, when you saved him from ruin? That wasn't instinct. That was courage. Deep-seated and wrenched from the guts courage.
But he had just received a telegram telling him that his son had died.
And he had turned mean through and through from drowning his sorrow in a bottle. Remember?
And that's the scene.
And we heard Lynn Podall as Clarence Oddbody, the guardian angel of George Bailey, who was played by Randy Offner. Both of them playing those roles on stage at Grissom Hall in Rantoul, starting Thursday, December 3rd. That's at 8 o'clock, and then second performance is on Saturday. And also at 8 o'clock, there's a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock, and then also next weekend performances as well, the 11th, 12th, and 13th. The Rantoul Theater Group here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we'll hear a few more scenes from that play. I thought I'd spice up our conversation and role playing here with some music by the man who wrote the music for that film, Dmitri Tiomkin. And here's some of the music he wrote for was it Gary Cooper who was in High Noon? That was the main theme to the 1952 film High Noon, composed by Dmitri Tiomkin, and played here by the Hollywood Bowl Symphony under the composer's direction. Dmitri Tiomkin wrote the music for the film It's a Wonderful Life, Frank Capra's film, which is being brought to the stage in Rantoul by the Rantoul Theater Group, beginning this weekend and continuing next weekend as well, actually beginning on Thursday for an early weekend. And you're not doing a Friday performance because you're playing somewhere else or doing something somewhere else, I think.
We are taking part in Rantoul's first evening parade. The Christmas parade is being held Friday night at 6 p.m. And it's a festival of lights, so all the parade floats are supposed to be lit up, so it should be a good show.
So the Rantoul Theater Group will have a float.
Yes.
Of some kind, and will you all be dressed as Wonderful Life characters, or...?
No, we expect it to be about 25 degrees out, so we tell everybody just to button up.
Yeah, Friday's going to be cold.
We will be singing Christmas carols from the show.
All right. Members of the Rantoul Theater Group here with us on Live and Local today on FM 90.9. And we're going to have a few more scenes from them. First, let me mention that our program today is made possible with support from Champaign-Urbana Ballet, presenting The Nutcracker with Sinfonia da Camera at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, December 4th through 6th. Tickets to see you ballet's The Nutcracker are available at the Krannert Center. What is the next scene that we have?
The next scene is George and Mary walking home from the dance where they fell into the swimming pool underneath the stage.
And that, what sort of, tell us what's happened up to that point, capsule version.
Well, George has been out of school 4 years, and his younger brother's having a dance at the school, and they talk him into going, and while he's there, he begins dancing with Mary Hatch, a girl that he's known for most of his life. And her date becomes jealous, so he flips the switch that separates the dance floor, revealing the swimming pool, which they then fall into.
And so this is all in the flashback of his life that Clarence has instigated. Okay.
Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Won't you come out tonight? Won't you come out tonight? Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight and dance by the light of the moon? Oh, just like the church choir.
Oh, beautiful.
You should have seen the commotion in that locker room, Mary. I had to knock down 3 people to get this stuff we're wearing. I bet over half your class jumped right in that pool.
Half the town said it wasn't a good idea to build a gym floor over a swimming pool. I wonder who turned the key.
Oh, probably somebody jealous because you chose me to dance with you.
You think, maybe?
Here, let me take some of that old wet dress of yours. Well, hello.
Hello. You look at me as if you don't know me.
Well, I don't.
You pass me on the street almost every day.
Me?
Uh-huh.
No, that's some little girl named Mary Hatch. That's not you.
Do I look as funny as you do?
I guess I'm not quite the football type, but you look wonderful. You know, if it wasn't me talking, I'd say you were the prettiest gal in town.
Well, why don't you say it?
I don't know. Maybe I will say it. How old are you anyway?
You can't ask that.
I just did.
18.
18? Well, that just means last year you were 17.
Too young or too old?
Oh, no, just right. Your age fits you. Yes, sir, you look a little older without your clothes on. I mean, without a dress, you look old. I mean, younger, you'd look just... Sorry.
Sir, my train, please.
Pox upon me for a clumsy lout. Your caboose, milady.
You may kiss my hand.
Hmm. Hey, Mary.
As I was lumbering down the street.
Okay,
down
then,
the
I'll just throw a rock at the old Granville house.
Oh, no, don't. I love that old house.
No, you see, you make a wish, and then you try and break some glass. You gotta be a pretty good shot nowadays, too, with so many windows already broken out.
Oh, no, George, don't. It's full of romance, that old place. I'd like to live in it.
That old place?
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't live in it as a ghost. Now, watch. Right on the second floor there.
What did you wish, George?
Oh, not just one wish. A whole hatful, Mary. I know what I'm going to do tomorrow, and the next day, and the next year, and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world. Italy. Greece. The Parthenon. The Colosseum. Then I'm going to go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things, Mary. I'm going to build airfields. And I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. And I'm going to build bridges a mile long. And you're going to throw a rock? Hey, that's pretty good. What'd you wish for, Mary?
Buffalo girls, can't you come out tonight?
Can't you come out tonight?
Can't you come out tonight?
Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight and dance by the light of the moon? What'd you wish for when you threw that rock?
Oh, no.
Oh, come on, tell me.
If I told you, it might not come true.
Well, all right, then what is it you want, Mary? You want the moon? Well, you just say the word, and I'll throw a lasso around it, and I'll pull it down to you. Hey, that's a pretty good idea. I'll give you the moon, Mary.
I'll take it, and then what?
Well, then you could swallow it, see, and it'd all dissolve, and the moonbeams. The moonbeams would shoot out your fingers and your toes and the ends of your hair. And... Am I talking too much?
Yes, you are.
Who's that?
Why don't you kiss her instead of talking her to death?
What?
Ah, youth. You know, it's wasted on the wrong people, Ernie.
Yeah, you're telling me.
Just wasted.
Hey, hold on, Bert. Ernie, come on back here. I'll show you some kissing that'll really turn your head around.
George, come home quick. Your father's had a stroke.
Pop? Mary, I'm sorry, I've got to go.
Come on, George, let's hurry.
Did you send for a doctor?
Yes, Campbell's there now.
And we heard as George Bailey, Randy Offner, and playing, sitting in on the role of Mary Hatch was Jessica Holmes, and playing a few people there at the end, I believe, was the director of Rantel Theater Group's production of It's a Wonderful Life, Michael C. Nelson. And you're hearing it on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Randy, Jimmy Stewart has such a distinctive way of speaking mm-hmm. and acting and so on. How difficult is it for you to avoid that?
He's like my acting idol, so it's really easy because I want to pay him homage. I can't tie his shoelaces acting-wise, and I don't even try. So I just try to make this my own, and I try and do a few inflections of his every once in a while, but I try to make the whole thing my own and not try to be Jimmy Stewart because that'd be just impossible.
Well, I thought I caught a couple.
Yeah.
There.
Real subtle.
And I didn't know if you meant them or not. Because
I did.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Because I would think it would be, you know, it would be easy to sort of lapse into a caricature almost.
Yeah. Yeah, and stammer and stutter all over the place and wall and all this. No, I'm not going to do that. I have too much respect for him.
Yeah, that's such a classic character. And Mike Nelson, what do you find that some particular challenges of directing this show? I assume from having seen the movie.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you're talking about is the most difficult. I've directed half a dozen shows that either were based on movies or became movies. And by far, this is the hardest one to put those actors out of my mind and make these people their own. I mean, as Randy said, we can't be the men and women that were in these pictures. So we have to find the characters ourselves and stand our own 2 feet.
We don't have the fellow who's Mr. Potter here. Tell us about that character. He's in your publicity material. You describe him as a Scrooge-like villain, which of course is appropriate to analogy to make it also at this time of year.
Yeah, he really is. He's the richest man in town, and he's a cranky old man, and he doesn't get along with anyone and doesn't particularly want to. He has the money, so they have to come to him when they want to get what they want to get, and he's happy to let that be the total of his interaction with the public. It was played by Lionel Barrymore in the movie, and probably just a hair, you know, less well-known than Jimmy Stewart's portrayal. And thankfully, the gentleman that's playing Mr. Potter for us, Doug Slate, has really been making it his own character in the same fashion.
And how about you, Lynn Podol, playing Clarence? Do you have a similar challenge? What was the name of the actor who played
Henry Travers?
Okay, was he somebody who was well known at that point? I'm not enough of a film buff to say.
I don't know. I would say I think he was more of a character actor. I believe he was also in The Best Years of Our Lives that year, the film that beat It's a Wonderful Life as Best Picture. But seen him in a couple other movies, but I don't think he was a household name. I think he was, you know, just a busy actor at that time.
Just a busy character, and that was Jeff Bossert speaking. So, Lynn, your challenge is with Clarence.
Well, Clarence, you know, I'm theologically trained, so you know the character is not an angel in my view. He's a caricature of an angel, and I struggled to try to find a voice for him, and I kept coming up with this idea of trying to get the words all out in front of the teeth. And so I woke up one Saturday morning and said, oh, that's Long Island. Where everything is out in, you know. And so I went to Mike and said, let me try him with a, you know, kind of a Brooklyn Queens kind of accent. And at the end of the week, he came back and said, okay, it's okay, but tone it down. So we've toned it down to just kind of a trace of that accent. But I guess what I was going for there was kind of a something else than is in the rest of the play, a different sound in the voice primarily. Which other than that, he's just a guy. Pardon?
No, I'm sorry. Which is what we did for his character in every aspect. Tried to make him stand out from everyone else, be different. His clothing, his behavior, everything. To make him be different from this community. I mean, he's supposed to be 140 years old, so we wanted him to act and his mannerisms and his dress and, you know, everything we could get to be different from this place, since everyone else has such a similar direction.
He doesn't even get to move around the stage. He's parked in one place.
Oh, is he? Why do you say he's not an angel? I mean, he identifies himself as an angel. He's older than your average person.
Yeah. Well, this is the popular conception that people turn into angels, but biblically that's not true at all.
But we're talking theatrically.
Yeah.
Theatrically.
He's a theatrical angel, all right.
Well, there you go. His character is, he says he's an angel. He's doing angelic things. He must be an angel for the purposes of the play.
For the purposes of the play, yes.
Yes, right, exactly. We have another little musical excerpt here by Dmitri Tiomkin, who wrote the score for It's a Wonderful Life. And as I said earlier, we don't happen to have a recording of that score here at our station. But I thought we'd have a little fun and explore some of the other films for which Dmitri Tiomkin has written some music. And I think the one we have next is the title called The Legend of Navarone, which comes from the film called The Guns of Navarone, hearing it on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Dmitri Tiomkin's music for the film The Guns of Navarone, that was this segment titled The Legend of Navarone, heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Dmitri Tiomkin wrote the music for It's a Wonderful Life, Frank Capra's film, from 1946, and the Ransel Theater Group is bringing it to the stage in the dramatization by James W. Rogers, adapted directly from that film. Michael Nelson is the director and is with us on the show today, as well as a number of members of the cast. And Jeff Bossert, you mentioned earlier that another film beat out It's a Wonderful Life for, was it Best Picture
that
year? And it's sort of odd to think that this classic of American film was considered something of a flop, apparently, both financially and particularly financially. It was nominated for a number of awards and didn't win anything.
Yeah, I think it had some pretty significant critical praise, but did not draw audiences. And some people, I think some have speculated that it was the dark nature of the whole scene when George, you know, learns what the world would have been like if he had not been born. It maybe didn't appeal to audiences, although at the end of the film, we learn... That George has learned to appreciate and love his life and all the people in it, but although I guess what some of us have talked about here is the fact that the film was not a financial success led to the fact that it was in public domain for years, and that's why it ended up on so many TV channels for so long, and I would think brought about the resurgence in its popularity and now viewings that you see every year and Christmas Eve and being a top-selling video, et cetera.
Yeah, one of the things that just you have to see sometime during this particular season. So why not see it on the stage in Rantoul If you've seen the movie umpteen times, here's a different way to look at it. The members of the cast that we have with us are Randy Offner in the role of George Bailey. Lynn Podall is Clarence Oddbody. Larry Smith, who's playing Mr. Gower, I believe is going to read Mr. Potter in a scene coming up soon. And Jeff Bossert, who was just speaking, is Harry Bailey. He's one of George's sons. Is that right?
His brother.
Brother, okay. I don't remember the show. It's not one of those things I watch every year. And then we have Jessica Holmes, who is not technically in the cast but is with us for today in order to facilitate a couple of these scenes. Well, what do we have lined up next? Mike Nelson, who's director.
Now we're going to have a part of the scene where George is a little bit older than the last time he ran into Mary Hatch and has yet to accept the attraction that they have between each other. So he walks by the house and comes up on the porch, and then they get a phone call from one of their school fellows, Sam Wainwright.
Hello, Sam. How are you? Guess who's here? George Bailey. George! It's Sam. He wants to talk to you.
Me?
Hurry, it's long distance.
Hello, Sam.
Well, George Bailiofsky, some pal you are. What are you trying to do, steal my girl?
What do you mean? Nobody's trying to steal your girl. Here's Mary.
Now, wait a minute. I want to talk to both of you. Tell Mary to get on the extension.
He wants you to get on the extension.
Mother's on the extension. Now we both can hear. We're listening, Sam.
I have a big deal coming up that's going to make us all rich. George, you remember that night in Martini's bar when you talked about reading someplace about making plastics out of soybeans?
Yeah, soybeans, sure.
Well, Dad snapped up the idea. He's going to build a factory right outside of Rochester. And here's the point. Now, Mary, you're in on this too. Now, look, George, have you got any money?
Money? Yeah, well, a little.
Well, I want you to put every cent you've got into our stocks, you hear? And, George, I may have a job for you. That is, unless you're still married to that broken-down building and loan. This is the biggest thing since radio, and I'm letting you in on the ground floor. Now, Mary?
I'm here.
Would you tell that guy I'm giving him the chance of a lifetime, you hear? The chance of a lifetime.
He says it's a chance of a lifetime.
Now, you listen to me. I don't want any plastics. I don't want any ground floors, and I don't want to get married, ever, to anyone. You understand that? I want to do what I want to do, and you're... Oh, Mary.
George.
Who threw that in there? You know, every theater troupe has to have a clown, and I have a feeling that one of them is with us, Larry Smith. Threw that in there. Was George Bailey as Randy? No, Randy Offner as George Bailey.
I'll
take it the other way around. And Jessica Holmes reading Mary Hatch, and Jeff Bossert in the role of Sam Wainwright, all members of Rand Tool Theater Group's production of It's a Wonderful Life. And just to run through those performance dates again, that opens on Thursday at 8:00 at Grissom Hall Theater in Rand Tool. It's on the old Air Force Base there. And then continues on Saturday at 8:00. There's a matinee on Sunday at 2:00, and performances on the 11th, 12th, and 13th as well. And we're pleased that these folks come with us and share some familiar scenes, familiar to many anyway, who are up on the Frank Capra film. It's been many, many years actually since I've seen it. So, and you know, I don't think I've ever seen the film all the way through, if you believe it or not. It's always, I've only ever seen it on TV, and I seem to almost always turn on the TV at the same spot for some reason or another. So I probably ought to just rent it sometime and do that. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. Support for our program today comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, celebrating their 10th anniversary at 6th and University in Champaign, December 4th through the 13th. World Harvest features imported chocolates, cookies, cheeses, gift baskets, and party catering. Also through the holidays, daily food tastings with an expanded tasting on Saturdays. So what do you think is the appeal, this seemingly universal American appeal anyway of It's a Wonderful Life?
I think it's because it's about a person who really doesn't think he's done anything in his life. And all of us need to look that even though we don't see it, we have hopefully affected someone's life either with a kind word or a note we've written or something we've done, and that we are all important in this world.
Yeah, it's the people around you that make you feel important. They know what you do, and very often they don't tell you you're a great person and we like to have you around our life and you've done a great job. So this is kind of an appeal that helps the world and the audience feel there's better things to come. It's what we call there's hope in the future.
And I think more simply, it's a call for people to realize that they can make changes, like Jess said, just by a kind word, just by being themselves. I mean, so often all of us are guilty of saying, well, I'm just being myself. I wasn't doing anything special. I was just being me. Well, one belief is that God doesn't make mistakes, and he made all of us, and we're doing pretty well just by being ourselves, and that should be enough.
Clarence sort of interprets it in one of his lines when he says, strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives, and when he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he?
Yeah, probably many of us would, if we went through that exercise, if we could go through the exercise that he gets to go through, courtesy of imagination of the author, Frank Capra. Actually, the short story is based on a short story which I hadn't realized, Philip Van Doren Stern, and then various people had their hand in the screenplay, including Frank Capra. Randy, as George. Speaking of being being yourself, why do you think you got cast as George Bailey?
It's putting me on the spot. The director's two seats down here. I think...
Pretend he's not there.
Okay, it's just me and you.
Because he was the tallest.
Thank you, Clay. There you go. I think it was a lot of... once you get to be in the Rantoul Theater Group, they see in enough shows like anywhere else, they get to know what you can do. And I think that was part of it, too. I think there was a little bit of a history going on there. But, yeah, the height thing, and I confess to buttering him up a lot of times over the past few plays. I didn't think it mattered, but apparently it did. So, thank you, Clay. You look great today, by the way.
Yeah. But I want to pursue this just a little bit further. What do you, aside from that...
Okay.
I mean, let's assume that you think you needed to butter him up, but in fact you didn't need to butter him up because something about your audition said, I assume you auditioned for this role.
Yeah.
Something about your audition said, I'm George Bailey.
I can just say hopefully. Like I said, Jimmy Stewart's my acting idol. He died on my birthday, so I imagine there's a little bit of karma going on there. But I've seen It's a Wonderful Life tons of times, and I would like to think that I have qualities that I can convey on stage that are like Jimmy Stewart-like, that are worthy of the character of George Bailey naturally, both on stage and off. Because one of my theories as an actor is that we bring a lot of stuff that we already have naturally to our roles, or else we have to go find that stuff for the deeper emotional stuff. And I would like to think that I'm a little bit Jimmy Stewart-ish, and I think we all are, in a way, George Bailey-esque. So I just needed to tap into that a little bit more, which for me comes usually too easily, if anything, which has its own downsides. But
so you really have a double identification. You're not only identifying as George Bailey, you're really identifying as Jimmy Stewart as George Bailey.
Well, like I said earlier, I'm trying to pay homage to Jimmy Stewart as George Bailey, and the best way I can do that is by being me on stage.
And that would be a tribute to George Bailey, since that's what he's supposed to be doing in the show.
Yep.
We might want to skip, Mike, do you have two more scenes? We might want to skip to the last one. One more? Oh, so we've timed this out just right then. Because I wanted to make sure that Larry Smith had a chance to actually play a part here, even though it's not the part he's in fact playing on stage. Larry's going to be Mr. Gower in this scene. Or no, you're Mr. Potter in the scene, because you are Mr. Gower in the show. Mm-hmm. And who else do we have in this particular scene?
And Randy as George.
Randy as George. Mike, you want to set this one up for us?
This is when a distraught George comes to the conclusion he has nowhere else to go but to Mr. Potter to attempt to recover the $8,000 that his company has misplaced. And the irony, of course, is that Mr. Potter has the money the whole time.
I'm in trouble, Mr. Potter. I need help. Through some sort of accident, my company shortened their accounts. Bank examiner's up there today. I need to get my hands on $8,000 immediately.
Oh, so that's what the reporters wanted to talk to you about, George.
Reporters?
Yes, they called me up from your building alone. Oh, there's a man over there from the DA's office, too, and he's looking for you.
Please help me, Mr. Potter. Help me, won't you please get... Can't you see what it means to my family? I'll pay you any sort of a bonus on the loan, any interest. If you still want the building and loan, what...
Oh, George, could it possibly be that there's a slight discrepancy in the books?
No, sir, there's nothing wrong with the books. I've just misplaced $8,000. I can't find it anywhere.
You misplaced $8,000?
Yes, sir.
Oh, have you notified the police?
Well, no, sir. I didn't want the publicity. Harry's homecoming tomorrow.
They're going to believe that one, George, let me tell you. What have you been doing, George? Playing the stock market with the company's money?
No, sir. No, I haven't.
Oh, what is it then? A woman then? You know, it's been all over town that you've been giving money so freely to Violet Peterson.
What?
Oh, not that it makes any difference to me, but why did you come to me? Why didn't you go to Sam Rainwhite? Ask him for the money.
I can't get a hold of him. He's in Europe.
Well, and what about all your other friends, George?
They don't have that kind of money, Mr. Potter. You know that, sir. You're the only one in town that can help me.
Oh, I see. I've suddenly become quite important to you. What kind of security would I have, George? Have you any stocks?
No, sir.
Bonds? Real estate? Collateral of any kind?
I have some life insurance. A $15,000 policy.
Oh, yes, and how much is the equity in it, George?
$500.
Look at you. You used to be so cocky. You were going to go out and conquer the world. You once called me a warped, frustrated old man. Well, what are you, a warped, frustrated young man? Miserable little clerk, crawling in here on your hands and knees begging for help. No securities, no stocks, no bonds, nothing but a miserable little $500 equity in a life insurance policy. Why, George, you're worth more dead than alive. Why don't you go out to the riffraff you love so much and ask them to lend you the $8,000? You know why? Well, it's because they'd run you out of town on a rail. But I'll tell you this. I'll tell you what I'm going to do for you, George Bailey. Since the state examiner's here, I'm going to go out and swear out a warrant for your arrest. Misappropriation of funds, manipulation, malfeasance.
No, no, no.
All right, George, you go ahead. You can't hide in a little town like this.
Mr. Potter is a mean man.
He is a mean man indeed. He owns all the town except the building and loan, and he wants to buy that too.
And so is this the point when George is really off the deep end at that point? Yep. And there it goes from there. Well, thank you all very much, members of the Rantoul Theater Group's production of It's a Wonderful Life, adapted from the film by Frank Capra, dramatization by James Rogers, directed by Michael C. Nelson, who is with us, as well as Randy Offner in the role of George Bailey, and Larry Smith, who just read the role of Mr. Potter but is playing Mr. Gower. Lynn Podol is Clarence Oddbody, the guardian angel, and Jeff Bossert in a couple of roles, Harry Bailey and Sam Wainwright, and Jessica Holmes filling in as Mary
Hatch.
Thank you very much. I forgot the name. And the show opens on Thursday. For tickets, what does one have to do?
Give us a call at 217-892-1121 and leave us a message about how many tickets and for which night, and we'll make you out a reservation.
And if you don't remember that number, you can go to their website at rtgonline.org. rtgonline.org, Rantoul Theater Group. Thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. We'll go out with a little more music by Dmitri Tiomkin.